Wait a second. You're Cam Bickle?
No, I'm not. I'm actually not. That is the voice of Greg White, which if you listened yesterday here on the Bridgestone CSBK podcast, you heard Greg White going, you are who, sorry?
Kneepuck Bickle?
Kneepuck Bickle?
And Greg White is now my number one enemy in the racing world.
It is Cam Bickle alongside Colin Fraser, myself, Marshall Ferguson. As the Daytona 200 is in the books, if you are listening to this.
And can you tell people who have been out in the sun a very long time today?
Yes, well, I mean.
Kneepuck.
Puck.
Bickle.
Bickle. Yes. No, he has not, because Cam was actually responsible. I have been hanging out throughout the day in the pits trying to get as much understanding of this race as I possibly could because it's my first time being here, and it was so much fun. It was so great to understand what this thing was. There's some tragedy. There's some triumph. There's some fun. There's so many angles to this. So
I laughed. I cried. Yes, I bought the book.
100%. This is what the Daytona 200 I've learned is. So, Colin, let me open it up to you. What will you take away from this off the top? What this race was for CSBK riders or in general?
Well, I think it's the Yogi Berra. It's deja vu all over again, yeah. Right? Because this event has jumped in status and stature, and I'm happy. I'm excited to be back here. I stopped coming for a while. I came for a very long time, year after year, and enjoyed it a lot. But the apprehension and the weirdness has crept back very, very quickly.
Yep.
Now, having said that, we didn't have a red flag, and I was sure there'd be a couple of them, and that also took away the crazy ending we had last year. So it was a little bit different. So it was a good Daytona 200. But yeah, now we're back to various forms of carnage and abuse, and just a lot of, I mean, Hunter S. Thompson would call it bad craziness.
The way that this thing played out, Cam, I think you could say it was interesting for a lot of reasons. If anybody has listened to Ben Young talk about it, he said, I was doubting myself. I didn't know why people were going in for a third, for a splash, right? Pit strategy is a huge part of what happens here. But he also said, I was riding around in a pack where I understood, okay, I know what this person's about, that person's about. I'm going to get passed by Josh Herron. That's fine. He's in the lead. I get the blue flag. But there was a lot of mystery, it felt like, to this one, where it was, there were people who were faster than the pack. There were those who were stuck in a certain pack, whether it be the second or the third. There were those who dropped back further than they thought they would be. What jumps out to you in terms of your overall thought on the race at this point?
Well, a lot of the things you just described kind of are just typical of the Daytona 200, right, which is what makes it so unique and so weird compared to every other normal race. But this year was a little bit weirder than certainly last year, in that there was significantly less drama, especially after the first few laps, and less, you know, chaos amongst the lead group, if you can say that there was a lead group, because there wasn't for very long. And especially, you know, most of the packs started to spread out, and we didn't really have that sort of confusion that we had a year ago. And yet there's a lot of interesting storylines that still came out of the race. Even if it wasn't the most exhilarating 57 laps that we watched, there's still a lot that we can certainly reflect on and say, well, you know, he had a really fascinating ride, that team had a really fascinating strategy, and definitely the three tire two tire debate is kind of at the center of a lot of that. And I think we now know in hindsight that it really isn't much of a debate. It really backfired on a lot of teams.
Did today change anything in terms of strategy moving forward, Colin, in your mind? Or was it just miscalculation by various teams?
Well, you know, when you get to go head up and, you know, stop dealing with all the things you have to do over the course of the day on our side of things, and go looking for the story, which is a fun thing to do, particularly here, there's a pretty big break before the race starts on Sunday. So when I went looking, what I seemed to start hearing about, and of course, this is one of those subjects like tire use and tire wear, where you cannot trust your sources, that's fuel consumption. And there was a lot of speculation about the Suzuki's maybe not being as good as they have been for a long time, particularly the top Suzuki's. And of course, you know, you're not sure of what sort of data people are telling you, and people were talking about, you know, the fuel tanks are modified for the dry break, the method they fill them. And in some cases, that makes the tank a little bigger. Sometimes it's smaller. They have to fill the tank. The thing you like to, believe it or not, what you like to put in the tank to fix the volume issue are ping pong balls. But you can't do that with the dry break because they can get sucked in when it vents.
Yep.
And then they have foam. They're mandated to have foam to keep the tank from sloshing. So measuring the tank is not nothing at the Daytona 200 because the tank is very, very important. And there were a lot of people wondering what was going to happen, and here's a shock: after Park Ferme, one of the front runners got DQ'd on a tank issue. So that's new, and it's not surprising because, you know, if I'm looking for an edge, that's one of the first places I'd look. Particularly because a couple of teams clearly had no faith in their mileage, and the Rahal guys, who from a distance seem to be the most professional team. Maybe that's just because they're, you know, car guys, what our opinion is of car guys. They had the most conservative strategy. They were committed to multiple stops, and, you know, they came in late in the race and then started racing each other, which it just seems so strange to me that that team would produce that outcome. One of the side stories or backstories or compelling stories, or the one that the general media is going to follow, involves a young woman who ended up getting a fantastic result and late in the race rode really hard and well, and I think attracted some attention.
And to your point on the Rahal Ducati Moto team, like I thought, as I was watching that play out live, and they dove into the pits late, and they were trying to almost like do a double stack and all the rest, is I'm like, are they just trying to prove that this new team is here for real? Because that was honestly my thought process, was they were trying to send a message down, and it's not as though you're going to use the Daytona 200 to send a message and basically ruin your race. But it felt like they were going, watch this. We've done enough of this. We figured it out. It was a very professional model, but it was very IndyCar. And the idea of, we can splash and go anytime we want. Watch this. And it was so interesting to me to see that play out in real time and them crash down pit lane at the end of the race. And you guys obviously at this point haven't heard it, but talking to Ben Young, he basically said, I had blue flags that were coming because I saw Josh Herron coming around me. I had seen people going in for two and then three stops, and it started making me doubt myself. Do we have enough? Should I push? Should I sit? Do I have enough space behind me that I can actually comfortably sit in this spot? Because there was a section of this where Stefano Mesa was in front of Ben, and he basically went from like a 2-second deficit to the delta went to like 6 to 8. And I asked Ben afterwards, and he goes, yeah, I just, whether it was him or T. Cobbs otherwise, I realized I'm in a pretty good spot. We've accomplished a lot by being in this spot. Maybe I should just settle down and try to appreciate the spot that I've been in, Cam.
Yeah, I think it's funny that we've talked a lot about the tire strategies and that sort of complications and second guessing, you know, two stop, three stop, blah, 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 when in reality, what ended up becoming the storyline at the end had nothing to do with tires. It was the fuel.
Yeah.
And obviously we should preface that by saying, you know, we're looking at this from the Bridgestone lens. We don't know, you know, what was different with the guys on the other two brands, but, you know, in hindsight, the tires seemed very straightforward and the story became, you know, the guy that won openly admitting, yeah, I ran out of fuel going into the pit lane. Yeah. I almost ran out of fuel again on the last lap. You had the guy that was in second place running out of fuel on the last lap. I obviously understand why everyone was so nervous about the tires, but in reality, it didn't seem to be much of an issue for any of the top two guys
I think we got a little bit lucky, and I talked to one of the other tire suppliers, and this was their thought. If you noticed, it clouded over just before things going, and
it also spit rain.
I was out there working, and three times in the last few minutes, it rained.
So it spit, not to interrupt you, but it spit rain, and then it disappeared. And we were expecting we would get this race in, and it would finish, and there would be a downpour. And I don't know what it's doing outside right now, because we're inside the media center, but there were dark clouds circling around. There were all sorts of clouds that looked like they were threatening, and it never actually really poured down. But man, there were a lot of people in that Bridgestone paddock that the pit that I was in throughout the race, who were basically looking up and going, man, if this thing comes down, like, what are we going to do? How are we going to change our strategy? Because
also, let's remind everybody, there's no rain tires here. There's none here.
And they're not going to run in the rain at all. So it was very much them going, okay, so if it doesn't actually rain, but if it spits, what do we do? Do we call the guys? Well, the good news
is that when it rains just a little bit and the track's as hot as it is, and it's, you know, it soaks the heat, particularly this time of year in Florida, it's got to rain for it to turn into a problem. But of course, once you've got rain on your visor, it's what's going on in your head that's, you know, it's easy to sit and say we'll be okay. It's a little trickier when you're trying to win the Daytona 200. And, you know, Herron slowed down a lot at the end, and I was worried Ben was going to pass him and have to do the extra lap. Like, I thought it was good that, you know, Herron wound up in front of Ben right before the finish. Then Ben has one more lap of fuel in the motorcycle, right? But when there's a lot going on, it would be easy to lose that bit of information in your head.
I genuinely wonder, though, too, Cam, like, what is the psychology of somebody who a little bit of rain on your visor at Grand Bend is a lot different than a little bit of rain on your visor at Daytona?
Yeah, well, part of it is the difference in the rules, mentality that you know you're not racing this track in the rain. So obviously, you know, that plays into it. You saw Herron on the front straightaway pointing to the sky a couple of times. You could see it on the broadcast. Yeah, they made comment of it, of Josh Herron. Well, we assume he had his finger up. It may have been some sort of signal, but it was kind of right at that time when things were spinning. So it's the same conditions for everyone, theoretically. But yeah, I got to imagine, and again, I'm not a former racer, but I got to imagine it's going to give you a lot of pause and a lot of hesitancy. But, you know, at the end of the day, until that flag comes out, all you can do is keep racing.
I literally said to my 3-year-old Noah this past week, I go, buddy, when it rains, what happens? He goes, the tires, they get slippery. I'm like, yeah. So if you understand that, right, at the youngest of ages, as soon as you see any little dots on your, Colin, you know this. You see the dots in your visor. What do you start thinking about? Because in the closing laps of this, it was very much a question. It was up in the air of, is it fuel mileage, tires? Is it rain? Is this going to be flagged? Is this not?
So let me throw something else in. You know, a lot of these guys have spent all winter focused on they're going to do the 200. But they also, as much as they were getting fit for that goal, they also were anticipating having some Gatorade sitting on the pit wall during red flags. Uh-huh. That didn't happen. And one of the things that reminded me of the bad old days was the sloppy riding at the end. There were people just all over the track and blowing apexes and not T-boning each other, but just running each other wide, and people on the grass and, you know, right on the verge of the track with dust flying. And that's how it used to be. And the bikes, back then, the bikes were in bad shape too. Here, I don't think that many bikes were in trouble, but I saw a lot, even some of the front running guys clearly had been exhausted. And it was funny, you know, we were touched on that Rahal thing. Look at those two hammered down going at it with each other late in the race. They didn't look like they were tired. They didn't look like they were fading mentally. And some people, even early in the race, I was at the chicane for a while, and people were just flying off the track everywhere. And the start was terrifying at the chicane. 5 bikes on the first lap.
And this is the thing, too, is people who were on the pit straight don't realize that. Like, if you have a screen, that's fine. But this is the nature of Daytona. Is this place is so big that when you came over and you told me that after a couple of pit stops, and I'm going, hey, I'm checking in. You're going, yeah, the chicane in lap one was carnage. I go, really? Who knew? And that's what's amazing.
It wasn't just carnage. It was Canadian carnage.
Yeah, unfortunately. So let's dive into some of the Canadians. Let's begin on perhaps the unfortunate end of things before we get to some of the success stories that we've already covered in this podcast. Where did you see the carnage? What was the worst part of it? I mean, I saw a picture of Brad McRae that just blew my mind because I hadn't seen that. I've seen him limping through the Bridgestone pit, unfortunately, but I didn't actually know what happened to him.
So there was a chain reaction incident at the chicane. You know, a lot of people get ambitious there. There's curbs, there's straw bales. It's not nearly as bad as it used to be, but things get hairy there. And Sebastian Tremblay, unfortunately, in his career, has been run into multiple times. And he was running fairly well and got clipped and went down. And then other people tried to avoid him. Amongst them was McRae, who launched himself and his motorcycle. And McRae got up pretty quickly. He's very fit. Sebastian, his bell was rung. He was pretty rattled, and McRae kind of helped him off, and they chatted for a while. They both got in the ambulance. But, you know, half the Canadians, basically, their plan was, I'm going to go with Sebastian Tremblay, and he will lead me to the
promised
land.
There's only so many who will lead you to that spot, right? Like, it's, and I will say this, too, that talking to some of those guys after it had actually happened, and I realized, oh, man, something went down on the backside, and it wasn't good. So many of them just kind of shrugged and went, Daytona. Like, they knew. But we also knew from watching the timing sheets of Group B, throughout practice and quality one, quality two, that a lot of those Canadian guys were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Like, they were stacked up. And that was my concern going into this, was I wonder whether or not, if something does happen, whether it's their fault or not, if something goes down and you have this many CSBK guys that are this close together on the track because they've been in Group B, they've run together, they've set similar times, they've qualified this way. If something goes down, they're inevitably physically going to be close to each other, and what will happen.
And then we have Guerin, who you know, arguably has sort of been playing the part of understudy with Tremblay, doing a very good job, and he briefly was in a really strong position, and I think the bike developed some kind of an oil problem, and then that was the end of things for him.
He told me engine blew.
Anyway, the flip side is Simpson, who after this morning's warm-up thought his engine was going and said, I'll just do a lap or two and see. And he was really careful. He was right at the back, and then he started marching forward as, you know, he's that kind of guy, right? And he looked pretty good at the end. He didn't look exhausted the way some of the guys were, but imagine if he'd had the confidence to start aggressively, and he, you know, and he didn't, and good for him that he made the careful decision. But in the end, he actually had a decent race. And, you know, one of the conversations is the fallback, and we'll get to Dion in a minute, is at least I'm going to finish, and I'm going to learn, I'm going to do the pit stops, I'm going to figure out the tires. But it's really frustrating, you know, for somebody like McRae or Tremblay, who are trying to get ahead of this race, that they didn't gather the data, right? And, you know, McRae, you know, said, I spent all this money and I really wasn't in the Daytona 200.
That's tough. I mean, the thing that jumps out for me, too, from all of that is Simpson, after everything he went through early on in the week, if you want to call it that. I mean, it was only, what, 48 hours ago. But this is what we spoke about in the preview podcast, was this thing will go quickly. And it will happen rapidly, and you will have to adjust and all the rest. The teams that figure it out on the fly will be the ones that have success. But Matt Simpson coming into this week's, I'm here. I'm trying to learn the track. And Cam, you told me, you spoke to him, and he said, I just blew a couple of corners, right? Like, it was tough. Like, he couldn't find his way around. And then this is the weirdness that I have found in my first year being around Daytona, is the guys like Sebastian Tremblay, who we go, yeah, he's fast. Samuel Grant, he's building pace. He understands what he's doing around this track, even though he's learning it on the fly as well, because anything that Sammy jumps on, he's good. Matt Simpson goes out and misses a bunch of stuff, all the rest. And then at the end of the day, it's like he's the one who gets the opportunity to actually build pace and get laps and get experience. And it feels so random.
It's really one of the only races like it where you can have guys that end up one spot apart in the final order and have the most wildly different races and wildly different weekends.
I can tell you why. Imagine if we decided every race is going to be average of four races, because our average sport bike race, middleweight, whatever you want to call it, about 25 minutes regardless of the venue.
Yep.
And this was the running time of the race was right under 2 hours. So this was four races at once, including the pit stops. And of course, it's, you know, we're going back to the preview stuff. We can't overstate that pit stops, tire changes, and filling the bike full of fuel is a foreign land for almost everybody. And even the veterans haven't done it in a year, right? Yeah. Because endurance racing used to be a huge thing in North America, and motorcycles, it's not anymore. So very few of these guys have ever been in a serious endurance race. And to some degree, as Cam was talking about the other day, this is a serious endurance race.
The way that this played out, Cam, like it took a trajectory that I think we all thought was, well, we'll see, you know, Ben Young, Trevor Dion, Trevor Daly, those are the top three. They're in Group A. All the rest, we talked about that again on the preview podcast. But to see that actually play out in real time was really interesting.
Well, and early on, sorry to interrupt, Cam, you know, we haven't talked about Trevor Dion. He got it together. He was about where he needed to be to show what he was capable of. And that bugaboo that just seems chronic with the Canadians, he had a break problem. He had a team that says, no, you don't really have a break problem. Send him back out. But by the way, what is more fun than riding a motorcycle at 180 miles an hour when you're not confident that it has brakes?
I saw him come in. I was in the Bridgestone pit, Cam, and I ran down to go see what was going on. And I talked to a couple of people, and they said, brakes. And I go, okay. And he looks super frustrated. He's sucking water. They're looking at his bike. He hops back on. At that point, he's been in the pits for 90 seconds, 2 minutes. He jumps back on the bike, Trevor Dion, and he goes back out. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you didn't solve anything. You just said, go try. Right? Like, I can't imagine being in that situation. And then sure enough, he comes in very quickly afterwards.
Yeah, it has to be a pretty terrifying experience. We saw it firsthand last year with, you know, two of our Canadians here.
Yeah.
I was going to mention, as you said, Colin, that Trevor Dion did suffer a mechanical issue. He didn't go down like McRae and Tremblay. Daly and Young are the fascinating ones, and especially Daly, because Young has done this. This is now his fourth time. He's had good results. He's finished eighth, I believe, before, and ended up ninth today. Would have been somewhere in the top 15 last year if not for a late crash. He's an experienced rider. He knows the paddock. He knows this format. He's new to the bike, but Ben Young's been around a long time, as has Trevor Daly, but Ben Young's been here before a long time, is more experienced. You expect him to be a little bit more composed in the middle stage of the race and understand that I need to nurse these tires and this fuel and nurse my own energy and all those things to the end. Daly's a little bit of a different story because he hasn't been here. You know, he's a rookie in the Daytona 200 sense, just like all those other guys are. And yet I wonder, looking at how he raced today, and he had a phenomenal race today, how much of being teammates with Ben Young and being close with Ben Young and being in that garage has rubbed off on him, because he looked, he didn't look like a rookie at all. And when you look at the people that, a Daytona rookie, I should say, and when you look at the people that he was racing against on track, he, you know, for the most part, he was matching pace early and in the middle and near the end.
Well, I spent a little bit of time in
that pit. I was
going to
say, Colin, you made a face about that, about he's not, you know, he didn't look like a rookie or a Daytona rookie. But, like, I think that's fair on the idea of he was learning it, but he also was following Ben's lead, although he did get into an incident, which suggests that he didn't understand what he needed to do with this place. But at the same time, it was one of those where there were so many people that you talk about the sloppy riding coming out of the chicane, where they were all grabbing as much throttle as they could to try and find some pace on the backstretch.
So Ben is a calm guy and has the mindset that works here, and we've seen that. And last year was impressive, although it didn't yield anything. Then we look at his team, and they're similar. And the fact that he's their leader, it may be partly that his demeanor is crucial. I was in that pit for a while, and the calmness and the way they were processing the information and the sharing with each other. And there's a lot of data, and it's complicated. And you have to be very careful with the lap count because you're really worried about the fuel. But most of the Canadians were pitted together. I feel like the Young team demeanor leaked out onto all the other people, because some of the people had never ever done fuel stops and whatnot. And I saw a couple of sloppy ones, but I didn't see any catastrophes and I didn't see any panic.
Right.
So overall, a bunch of people who never did fuel stops and maybe didn't even have the guys they normally have access to in Canada. And I'm going to jump right to Simpson. I watched them have a front wheel problem,
yep.
But it wasn't catastrophic and they didn't panic. And overall the stop was good. And, you know, I think that's tough.
That was amazing to me, Cam, that they were able to like relax and realize, oh, there's a problem, we'll figure it out, because they slapped together this Simpson effort through so many different ventures. And I saw teams, and obviously this is hyper-focused on the Canadian guys. I saw a team just down from Team Battleaxe that messed up their back wheel so bad. So bad. They sat there for 30 seconds, just jam it in. If I push harder, it'll work. I'll figure it out and cram it in. Oh, try it. No, I still won't get it. Okay, rear axle. No, pull it out. Jam it back in harder. That was the whole thing in different teams, was you could see the inexperience and the immaturity, I guess is what we would call it, right? Is you see that from Simpson's team on the front wheel, where they go, we got an issue, something fell off, it didn't go the way we wanted, but they relaxed and they figured it out. And I'm like, that's kind of incredible considering the difference between team experience from team to team to team to team.
Yeah, and I also think you notice a lot about the mentality of the rider after a situation like that. And this is actually a point that I'm going to steal from my new nemesis, Greg White, because he pointed it out on the broadcast today. But, you know, you see a couple of guys.
Knee puck Bickle.
You see a couple of guys who have slower stops or things go wrong in the pit lane, and you know they I need to come out and charge my way back and make up for that time and
right.
put down, you know, a couple of really fast laps and eat up all the time that I just lost, and that's when you run into issues or potentially crashing out of the whole thing.
Yeah. You think it's so easy to blow 4 or 5 seconds, and you go out there to make out 4 or 5 seconds. That's a suicide run, right? You go out there to look for 0.4 a lap, not big carve off pieces, and that's where. You know, we saw it last year in the mid section of the race, and we saw it this year after the first stop. Ben is just relentless, right? He knows where he is. He's moving forward. He's not making it up in leaps and bounds. That's not practical. He's too good. He's too far up. The people he's around, the people he's expecting to race, are too good. So you really need that discipline. And knowing how hard to push is not just when Alex Dumas is in front of you.
Well, and I think where I was going with that, to Simpson's credit, but also a little bit Trevor Daly, because let's not forget he had a loose tail section, which is probably...
Well, he fell. That's why the tail section...
Well, he crushed it. Like, it was folded up. This was...
Yeah, it slid into something.
Yeah.
Okay, so I actually didn't see that.
Yeah, so. I just saw Ben Young's dad grab the duct tape and start wrapping it, and pulling the tail section down as hard as he could and wrap it around.
Well, I'm watching him do that. I'm thinking, it's going to break, right? Yeah. Like, oh, my goodness.
But if it snapped off, would it have broken... Body regulations?
I think it would have been a problem. But you know, what do you do? And I mean, the funny thing is, you see these pit stops with problems, and one guy at one end of the bike is worried that he saw this thing, and someone at the other end of the bike sees something different. And let's, you know, sometimes everybody comes back over the wall, and then they have a conversation. Like, half the people involved in the pit stop for Trevor didn't we had to assemble the knowledge that he'd fallen, right?
This is the crazy thing to me, though, is that, like, I've joked about this throughout the week, is when I'm watching football and something goes wrong, I know exactly what we're... Oh, the right tackle missed the block. Damn it! There goes the running back. He got tackled by the linebacker. You have a problem like Trevor Daly comes in, and half the team's going, what happened? And then the other half team's, oh, I saw on the TV he did that. Well, I heard he actually... Well, this happened, and then... And you start piecing it together, and it's word of mouth.
Oh, it gets better. I've been in an endurance race. So you get on the bike when your teammate brings it in. It was raining. And he hands off the bike. He seems to be in a bad mood, but he doesn't tell me anything. And I get going, and he's fallen and come in. Things are bent. You know, things aren't working right. I have to come right back into the pits, and now we have to fix something we were just in. But for whatever reason, he decided not to share with the other students. And it's very, very frightening to be on a motorcycle that isn't right. But the flip side is it's amazing how things can be bent. And you can adjust to them. And also, these bikes are made to take, like, the history of people falling at Daytona and continuing is just remarkable.
Yeah, well, just to wrap up the point that I was going to make a minute ago is, you know, the composure of not just those two guys. I'm sure a lot of guys in the finishing order to say, you know, we didn't have a great stop, but, you know, that's behind me. You come out, you keep your head down, you chip away at it, rather than make up this big, you know, leap in the first five laps. Sort of to your point, you know, with the football comparison, you go out, you throw an ugly interception. Yep. The next drive, you don't think, oh, I got to be careful. You know, I got to throw an 80-yard bomb
can't
to make up for
change your mentality.
It. Yeah, you have to still execute the same way. Yeah,
can I point out that the football game where the team does come back out and do that, those are just the most fantastic games to
watch. Wait a second, you're Cam Bickle?
How many of those are we going to drop this episode?
Neep. Puck. Bickle.
I'm changing my name.
It's the new favorite drop here on the CSBK.
It probably won't help.
But no, it is amazing to see the mentality that they were able to harness, right? Which is, hey, things went wrong, things went sideways, and we'll figure it out.
I also think, too, like, to go on a completely separate point, I don't want to diminish, we kind of skipped over earlier Ben Young a little bit, and it's easy to do because he was so good to say, oh, well, you know, he was ninth today, he's been eighth before, it's, you know, it's kind of what we expected.
Deeper
of Ben
field
Young.
For sure this time.
Yeah, one of the strongest fields we've seen in a really, really long time. We wondered maybe ever since the Grand Prix days. And, you know, he rode a really smart race. I think where he really made his gains and where he really impressed me, well, and obviously this is coming from other side of the wall and not within his helmet on that bike, but stretching that first stint and especially that second stint out a couple of laps. I know you said he was a little bit hesitant. Well, you know, guys are going for the three stop. Should I? I think he bought himself a couple of laps where it maybe wasn't as tight of a decision as it normally would have been.
Yeah, totally.
If he had, you know, 19 laps left, 18 laps left, 17 laps left, is he scrambling? Of, you know, maybe it is a three stop, but by stretching out those first two stints, I think he pitted on lap 40, 41 for the second time. So to come out and put 15, 16 laps, you know, also possibly thinking there's going to be a red flag, I think it was a little bit less of a decision for him to make in the moment, and that was what really allowed him to make up a couple of spots at the end and climb into the top 10.
This is the peak of the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship as we head into the final lap. The white flag comes out.
One lap to go. White flag flag. Our last lap flag.
It's the white flag, the final lap.
Last lap flag. One to go.
All right, Colin, what do you got for us? What are you thinking about? What's the one thing that's on your mind at the end of this race?
Well, I think a victory by a Suzuki GSXR 750 is overdue. I would have predicted it this year that, you know, the Vision Wheels M4X Star guys are a juggernaut. And I think half the top 10 were GSXRs. And, you know, it obviously is a very competitive package. The rules are getting tweaked. The Ducati might have a little bit of an edge. There are more strong Ducatis. But, man, we are overdue for a Suzuki breakthrough. And as much as there were a lot of Suzukis at the front, it's hard. It'll be difficult to think of anything but what Herrin did for most of the race. And he did it mostly by himself.
Yeah, and so much of it, I guess, was we were wondering, okay, how do you break the draft? How do you get away? How do you find your own way to try and win this race? And then Josh Herrin just goes, oh, just watch. And he just runs away, right? He gets out in front. He controls it the whole time. And I think we saw that play out. Cam, what's on your mind?
To touch on one of our guys that we didn't talk a lot about, I want to know what the future holds for Matt Simpson. I think he's a guy who's been open about not having a ride this year, not knowing what his future is, not knowing when we might ever see him again. Like, well, let's not forget that this guy finished second in the Sport Bike Championship last year, took David McKay right to the last race of the year, didn't have a great start to the weekend, ended up as the third best Canadian on the grid and 25th. And, you know, I don't expect things to change drastically for him because of this. We hope they do. But I want to know what the future holds for Matt Simpson. I'm sure we'll see him back at some point. But I want to know, at what point is that? On what machine is that? What does the future hold for him?
And I hope he can take what he did here and in the amount of money he invested into being down here and take it to somebody and say, look, like, let's go find a way to make this work. I have the skill, obviously. And that was one of my favorite things, honestly, guys, from today, was watching Matt Simpson rip out of the pits, because unfortunately, Trevor Dion, the things he was dealing with, the brake failure and all the rest, is on his way out, he stalled it a couple times, and he was trying to recover the time you're talking about, Colin, where it was like, well, you can't make that back, but he was trying to rip, and stuck. And everybody in that entire pit, you're like, we got the race winner here. We want Trevor to do well, but it was frustrating, right? Because it's like, come with us. Come find the way that we're trying to lead this program. Trevor was put in a difficult spot this weekend, which is my final thought on this podcast, is he did a really good job of trying to adapt to the circumstances he was around. He was one of the only, if not the only, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but on not the Bridgestone. He was a Canadian living way away from what he's used to, because the Bridgestone paddock was essentially a Canadian Superbike Championship paddock. It was guys up in their garage, hanging out, talking to each other, helping. Hell, we had Brad McRae with the body stuff that fell off, and he had to go and get Matt Simpson to throw some stuff on it. It's like, that is quintessential Canadian Superbike Championship paddock. And you ended up having Trevor, who was way away from it all and trying to adapt to this team, and had a really good lead up to this. And we talked about it in the preview podcast. I thought he was going to have a significantly better race. It broke my heart, to be honest, watching him pull in, running down to his pit, and seeing him get off the bike and just despondent. Because he wanted to put in a result. He knew that Ducati is such a powerful vehicle that he wanted to find a way to get it somewhere up near the front. And he just couldn't, because it was just, that's the nature of this thing, right? Is it beats the absolute hell out of your parts. So what I'm excited for moving forward, I guess, is this is not the last podcast we're going to do before we get to round one in Shannonville for the CSBK season, but there's no way Trevor Dion doesn't take whatever happened today, whatever happened this week, whatever the dynamics were between him and Josh Herron, who wins the Daytona 200, and he doesn't use that as motivation and find a way to turn that into how do I attack the CSBK Superbike grid? I think that's going to be a really, really fun part of what we get to cover coming up in the next couple of months, really, leading into this. So we're looking forward to talking to everybody coming up into the round one adventure that will be Shannonville Motorsport Park.
Victoria Day.
Yes, we're coming up. It'll be the end of May. If you want any more information, of course, go to csbk.ca. If you want to follow on social media, go to CDN Superbike. Of course, you can follow Colin on social media at...
Inside Motorcycle, sponsored by AIM Insurance.
There you go. Go to all those things. Cam?
You can...
Are you guys even on social media? What are we doing? We're in a padded room here in Daytona. Come on, give yourself some self-promo.
I don't promo my stuff on my accounts as much as I should. I will take the blame for that. So you can read all you need to read on our website at csbk.ca.
There you go, csbk.ca. And if you want to see any pictures of a three-year-old riding a balance bike, you can follow me at tsn_marsh. That's the best place to get all of that. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for following along. We genuinely do appreciate it, right, guys? Of everybody who's listened to the podcast throughout this week, we've had a lot of fun sitting in hotel rooms and padded rooms at Daytona's media center and anywhere we could find to sit down and have a conversation. It's been a lot of fun. We're looking forward to chatting with you coming up in the Canadian Superbike Championship season. For now, we will let you go and talk to you next time here on the Bridgestone CSBK podcast.